Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And tonight, we have a very interesting guest here.
She's going to be interesting.
She is.
And I think from the synopsis I saw of all the possible things we could talk about, I think you might have to come back like three times.
Because this is going to be our best show.
Our best show ever.
Yet.
I'm sure it will be.
No pressure.
Big lead up. So there's a little tease there. She's from North County. Are you from Seaside?
I am from Seaside.
From Seaside. Give us one more hint before we actually introduce you.
I was a librarian for 47 years. Really long time. And I got my start with Mrs. Holly at the Seaside Public Library.
Oh, I love that. So do you recognize her voice, any of you listeners out there? You sound like you could read us a story tonight and just put us all to sleep. That'd be so nice.
I don't think it would put us to sleep.
Well, I mean, she has a very calm, good reading voice.
Yes. I probably could. I also did puppet shows for a while in my early library career.
Oh,
I don't know
fun.
Why I love that.
Yes.
Because I really don't have an affinity for puppets, but I don't know why. I'm very tickled by that.
So if you don't recognize her yet, this is Leah Griffith. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I think we got to get right through the history highlights because
she's going to have some good stories.
There's going to be a lot of good stuff. So these are things that happened tomorrow, October 11th, 1776. Ooh. Benedict Arnold fights valiantly at Valcour Island.
Valiantly.
Lake Champlain. He was one of our guys, when he was a good guy, before we didn't like him anymore, and before he did stupid things. He was actually a pretty good military guy.
Probably.
Yeah. But a British fleet under Sir Guy Carleton defeats 15 American gunboats under the command of Brigadier General Benedict Arnold at the Battle of Valcour Island on Lake Champlain in what is now Clinton County, New York. Although nearly all of Arnold's ships were destroyed, it took more than 2 days for the British to subdue the Patriot naval force, delaying Carleton's campaign and giving the Patriot ground forces adequate time to prepare a crucial defense of New York. So without that, the war could have gone a whole different way. He used a lot of fog, apparently, like morning fog and hiding behind island, and then all of a sudden ships would come out of the fog. And so he was pretty amazing.
Oh, nice, dramatic.
But again, I'm not forgiving Benedict Arnold. We still don't like him. He's still a bad guy. But at this point, he's a good guy. 1809, Meriwether Lewis dies under somewhat mysterious circumstances.
Oh.
1881, David Houston patents roll film for cameras.
Oh, what year again?
1881.
Oh. Well, that's significant.
That is.
I remember roll film.
Yeah, I loved it.
I'm
great.
Old. Let's see. This one I was going to... make you guess, but no, we'll go ahead and anyway. 1887, A. Miles patents the elevator.
Oh, we like that.
Yeah, 1887.
Yeah.
Before that, you had to just walk upstairs.
And is it the same person that did the escalator too?
I don't know.
Didn't we talk about that?
Maybe.
A couple weeks ago? I thought it was.
Could be. 1971, John Lennon's Imagine is released.
That's a good one.
Okay, I'm going to confess something that's going to make me like the most hated person in the world. I actually like, there's an episode of Quantum Leap where Scott Bakula sings it, and I kind of like his version better.
Oh, well, I like him.
Not that Scott Bakula is a great singer or anything.
He's good, though. It's a good show.
So anyway.
But a good song.
It is a good
song. Definitely a good song.
And I'm not going to try and sing it. 1975, Saturday Night Live debuts. That was almost my history highlight of the day.
I had that one.
1983, and this is the one I was really going to quiz you on. 1983, the last hand-cranked telephones in the U.S. went out of service as 440 telephone customers in Bryant Pond, Maine, were switched over to direct dial. 1983, they're still cranking phones.
I visited the museum / outdoor exhibit on that. I was going to say happened in Maine.
Oh, did they still have the...
They had a big telephone out in the lot.
Yeah.
And that you could, kind of play with and such. And it talked about that they were the last hand-cranked phones.
1983. Mm-hmm. I would have even been surprised at 63.
Okay. Yeah.
That just makes me laugh. I want to visit there now, even more now that we know that there's like an exhibit or something. Mm-hmm. 2002, Jimmy Carter wins the Nobel Peace Prize.
Nice.
Now, we could certainly debate his presidency, but I hope nobody debates that what a decent, wonderful human being Jimmy Carter is.
I'm sure that somebody would, but yes.
Probably. You're right.
we should not be debating
because he is a wonderful human being who has been just done amazing, decent things in his life. Mm-hmm. But our history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact, 1945. The Chinese Civil War begins between government led by Chiang Kai-shek and the Mao Zedong Communist Party. And of course, they're still kind of fighting that.
Yeah.
As we hear about jets flying over Taiwan's airspace. Yeah. So had a continuing impact on history.
For sure. Yep.
So 1945.
All right. That's good.
Did I miss any?
Nope. I had the SNL as well. That was a... Certainly not the history highlight.
You can tell where our minds are. Yeah. But so your roots go way back here.
They do.
So when did your family come here and why?
Well, my grandmother came here with her parents probably about 1890 something. She came here as a 5-year-old. She was born in Rock Island, Illinois. And but when she was 5, her mother passed away. And her father turned her over to the Salty family, Abram Salty, who was a river pilot here. And they later adopted her. But the family story, and I was thinking about this today, is the family story that I heard growing up. I mean, as a little kid hearing, is that the Salties adopted her because when Captain Salty would go up river to Portland to take the boats up, he would be gone for a couple of days. And he was kind of concerned that his very attractive wife was going to be, you know, off flirting with people or something. And again, we're hearing the story as little kids.
That's funny.
And so they adopted this little girl. She didn't have much of a life starting out, really. She had some tough times, started school here in Astoria. She spoke German. The Salties spoke Danish and Norwegian, I think. And when she went to school, they spoke English. So she couldn't talk to anybody at first. She had a really tough time growing up, but she later, you know, got through it all in her teenage years. She worked at Hoffler's Candies and made chocolates, dipped chocolates, including the Centennial chocolates in, 1911 would have been when they would have been done. And in fact, my older cousins remember her talking about them and that they were so good and, excuse me. And they were so good, and that her grandma always would talk about how you would dip the chocolates and then you would do a design on the top of the chocolate to say what was inside the chocolate.
Oh.
And
that's a great
Didn't know
idea.
That, did you?
Why don't we do that still? That makes so much sense.
They really don't. But somehow or another, we seem to have chocolate and candy in our family because my mother later worked at Leonard's Taffy in Seaside in the 40s, 30s and 40s. And then my sister worked for Tom and Larry's in Seaside, which is a big candy store there.
Still there.
And then my nephew, her son, married into the Bruce's Candy Kitchen family. And he's the candy maker there. And his girls now, of course, in high school are now working at the candy store. So we have 5 generations of people working in candy.
Wow.
I don't think too many people. And they're all different candy stores.
Yeah, I love that.
Except for the last two. And so, you know, there's this heritage of candy that permeates our family. So anyway, that's our candy history.
Do people in the family like candy?
I think people like candy too. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm a real fan of black licorice and seafoam at Bruce's Candy Kitchen. They make the best seafoam there.
Of course.
And, you know, back to the Centennial chocolates, that was a huge, huge deal. I mean, it's all over the newspapers in the time period and all the Centennial programs talking about make sure you pick up some of the Centennial chocolate. And I think they kind of shipped it all over the region. It really was a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, I think you had a Facebook posting about the Centennial chocolates a while ago, and I'm reading it all and going, oh, my gosh, that's my grandmother did those. So that was kind of cool.
And so tell us, though, about why did you stay here? Or did you leave and come back?
Well, my family lived here forever. Mm-hmm. My grandmother later moved to Seaside, where she married and had her family. And they actually ended up going back and forth to Minnesota a couple of times and then settled in 1921. My parents lived here forever. Her brothers and sisters all married Astoria people, so they all lived in Astoria. We lived in Seaside. And then my sister and her husband stayed in Seaside. When I graduated from high school and went to college down in Ashland, I basically didn't live in Seaside any longer after that. I kind of followed my library career around and ended up in a number of places, but ended up in Newburgh since 1992 and stayed there until I retired in 2019 as the library director there. So
back up a little bit. How did you get interested in library science, I assume, is the correct term?
And well,
how did you, I mean...
You know, kids always worked summer jobs in Seaside. I mean, it was just what you did. And so the first summer job I had was working as a motel maid at the Emerald Court Motel. And the last day of work, the police came and arrested the managers for drug dealing. My mother would not let me go and find another job next summer. I guess she didn't like how I had done the last summer. And so I had been hanging out in the library a lot, and I had actually stopped in and said, you know, Mrs. Hawley, do you need any extra help? And July 1st or so after the new budget year, I learned later, she asked if I wanted to come work. And so I started working every summer at the Seaside Library, and I really never worked anywhere else but libraries from that time on, from 1972 on. So what's that calculation? 50 years? Yeah. 49 years of library work.
And talk a little bit about her. How long was she the librarian there? And what kind of inspired you about her? I mean, she obviously was some kind of a mentor at this point.
Mrs. Hawley was the librarian in Seaside for probably, well, who knows now? I can't remember for sure. I should do that research. Probably for 20 plus years or so. I mean, I remember her as the librarian when I was a little kid. And then up through, you know, college times, I know that she was there. And in some respects, she was the quintessential 1960s librarian who was like, shh, shh. But I always laughed that if I would be there with friends, we'd be sitting at a table, that she would yell at the rest of them to be quiet, but she never would yell at me. I think she always liked me. And I always liked Mrs. Hawley. We got along really well, and I enjoyed working for her. It's been kind of fun. I've been volunteering at the Seaside Museum. And one of the first things they had me do was to look through the library that was there that basically hadn't really been touched since, Mrs. Hawley put it together in the 1990s. And it was kind of touching when I opened a book and I realized that, oh my gosh, there's Mrs. Hawley's writing and I remember it. Oh. And that was kind of neat. As I got rid of a lot of the books that she had that had nothing to do with Seaside, because back in the 90s, you kind of collected all sorts of stuff because there was no internet to search or anything like that. So I probably, people that love books will probably hate this, but I probably got rid of at least half the collection that had nothing to do with Seaside or Clatsop County. And now we can actually use the collection and get to it. But it was kind of fun to see her writing in there and kind of think about it. The library is named after her. I mean, it's one shelf, but it's still named after her.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel kind of good.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So because you're a librarian and like books, I always have to ask some of your favorite books.
You know, I'm probably one of those librarians that doesn't read as much as a lot of other librarians do. So I think I got into librarianship because I really like to organize things.
Yeah, that's good.
And in fact, that's really, you know, that was one of my hobbies as a small child, was to organize things. So, but I am a mystery reader. I do like to read, you know, a fun mystery I'm spending a lot of time reading on the ebooks that I can get through the library, and that's, I really enjoy reading those, especially at night, because it's so much easier to read a book online at night than to have a book fall on your face when you start to fall asleep in the evening. So
it has your own light and everything.
Exactly. I can have the light off. I can turn it down a little bit. You know, I like reading those online books.
I love them too. Mm-hmm. It's good. That was a great resource they added a couple years ago.
Yeah, it is.
So you said you headed into retirement. It was the grand year of 2019. Mm-hmm. You decided to take some months to actually relax, and then 2020 starts and you just are getting back into the groove.
I did. I'd been going to Rotary meetings and had been formally installed in January of 2020. And I'd said, you know, I think I want to get involved with the museum and with the library. And so I said, hey, I'd, you know, like to help out with things. And so I went and you know, helped people learn about things at the museum. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, we closed. And so then it was kind of like, oh, what do I do now? Well, I read a lot of books on Libby, on the online service, and did some gardening and walking and all those other things people were doing while they were home with COVID. Mm-hmm. And then really kind of last spring, things kind of started to open up a little bit. The museum was getting ready to reopen. The Library Foundation that I serve as the chair on was getting ready to do some projects, and Rotary was starting to meet in person again. And I was like, oh, now I'm getting involved with things. So, but the museum has kind of taken over my time. It seems like I've really kind of been intrigued by it, and I think it fulfills my need to organize things.
Yeah, and to tell stories.
And to tell stories, exactly. They've asked me to be the collections manager. And so as I have spent over 27 hours on Zoom trainings this last month, learning about collections and what I'm supposed to do, and that I don't have to wear white gloves anymore. I just have to wash my hands regularly. And because the oils will come back on your hands an hour after you wash them. So you've got to keep washing them every hour. So I'm just learning about, you know, humidity and temperature and how to organize things. And, you know, I'm going back into my library supplies in terms of looking at archive materials that we need to order and all that kind of thing. So I think I'm back to my basics of organizing things again.
And have you found any gems in that little collection that really stood out to you, or just something that you had no idea about?
You know, I haven't gone into things too much, but one thing that we just had, and again, I spotted it on Facebook. Somebody had posted a little sticker that had a girl diving in, not the Jansen girl, but kind of like the Jansen girl, in front of the turnaround building, which was our natatorium and pool. And I had personal messaged him and saying, oh, I'd love to get a copy of that. Well, he sent it to me. Mm-hmm. And so he'd actually had it stuck to his wall. So it's got like drywall stuck to the back of this thing. I've got to work on how to process that appropriately. But it's such a cool little thing. The turnaround building, the turnaround, and this girl diving. We actually photocopied it to make it a little bit bigger, and we used it in our prom display that we just put up in the museum. And it's bright colors, and that was just kind of a fun thing to see and to find. And probably the other thing that I really enjoy is that we've just added to our Butterfield Cottage, which is our beach cottage that we have, which was other things over the years. And one of the things it was the House of Roberts, a millinery store. And so we've taken one of the rooms and we've turned it into a millinery store. And amazingly, we had hats that Mrs. Roberts had made. These aren't just hats that from anywhere. These are hats with her label on it that she had made. We have, I think, half a dozen of them in there. And they're just gorgeous. They're just absolutely gorgeous. You would never wear them today, but they're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. I get to tell the story of, you know, birds being decimated because of women's hat feathers and such. I always add that little tidbit when I'm telling the story of the House of Roberts, is that's why we don't want a lot of feathers on our hats now, because destroyed birds.
It's true.
It did.
Not to museum geek out here, but I love chatting about the behind the scenes things that people just don't even think about. You know, they think they just give us an object and we immediately put it on exhibit, and they don't understand that we classify and document the heck out of anything that's given to us, that just a simple portrait photograph can have a page and a half description of all the things that a researcher, because we don't know what something in our collection somebody else is going to want information from. It may be a photograph has somebody with eyeglasses on it from 1880s, and they're researching eyeglasses of the 1880s, and somehow we've got to be able to find that photograph for that researcher.
That's where my library background comes in, using the Past Perfect program that we use to categorize our materials that I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to use, and I need to do some real training on figuring out how to make that be the most effective use. And to be honest, over the past, there was a marginal good use of it because it was a lot of volunteers and that such. So it's kind of one of these things where I need to kind of look through, and when I look at a page, kind of need to add more information to it because there's just not enough there.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things I'll be doing, and it's just kind of fun to do, and I'm enjoying it. So
that's fantastic.
Another thing you had mentioned was your grandfather was the police chief.
My grandfather was the police chief in Seaside. He and my grandmother had come back to Seaside from Minnesota in the early 20s. He owned a pool hall for a while in Seaside. And then he got on with the police department. He was a constable because they were actually elected as a constable, which I found the documents that said he was elected constable. And then he was appointed police chief, I believe, in the early 30s and early to mid 30s and served until like 53, when then he transferred and became the head of public works because of needing to get some Social Security quarters in for retirement.
Funny.
And I always thought that was so weird. But then I've been doing some looking in some old Seaside signals for the prom exhibit we were working on. And I kept finding these references to the police chief being in charge of the roads, the police chief being in charge of the sidewalks. And I thought, well, I guess maybe it wasn't that big of a reach for him to be the public works director after that. You certainly wouldn't find that kind of thing now. So much, but, so they were, he was there and I've got his badge and his hat and even his gun, hidden away. Hmm. And so my nephew, his great grandson is wanting to get those items when I depart this world. So he's got his name on those items.
I like pool hall to police chief. Yeah.
Isn't that a good one?
That's quite a career change.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's probably good at cracking down on somebody rowdy out of the way, and he figured might as well get paid for it out of my regular business job.
Make more money.
Exactly. And I think he was pretty, he was a big guy, and I think he was pretty rowdy about those kinds of things. I was the youngest of the youngest grandchildren. So by the time I came around, he was retired, he was mellow, he was such... In talking to my cousins, who, you know, one is 20 years older than I am, he would curse, he would yell, he would, you know, he was quite the tough guy. And he was probably 6'2" or 6'3" and a big guy. And I know my brother-in-law's father talked about how you didn't want to be on Harry's bad side if he was going to hit you, because this is going to sound kind of bizarre, but when he was a baby, his three fingers got cut off in a... lawnmower by his older brother. And so he was fine with that. You know, he could do everything, except he couldn't go into World War I because of not having his fingers, but it didn't stop him from being able to use a gun as a police, but Seaside. So how often did he really have to use a gun? Mm-hmm. But apparently if you got hit by those stumps on Harry's hand, Harry Kemmerer's hands, that was not a good thing.
Oh.
So sorry about that little story, but you know, I
know Alana doesn't like it, but I'm eating that one up.
But that's not the kind of thing you usually hear about with somebody. And I'm not even going to tell you the rest of the story about the fingers. So you'll really freak out on that one.
But see, that's where history to me comes alive.
Exactly.
Because it's one thing, oh, he was the police chief. And we all have an imagination of, oh, what that might entail in that time period and what that might mean. But all of a sudden, now he's just come to total life for me.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Harry Stumpf. It's going to stick Harry with Stumpf. You.
That's right.
I'm just trying to picture what, you know, how it would feel. I'm like trying to make a fist and picturing, well, what if fingers were missing? And
it's feel your knuckles. It's pretty, it's pretty hard. So no, we are always very proud of our grandfather. And one of the other stories that we always heard, and again, I don't know for sure about it, but that there was a Japanese family that lived in Seaside in December of 1941. And he was ordered to go and escort them to the camps. And he went the night before and told him that he was going to have to do that the next day. And when he went back the next day, they had already left, so that they got away and didn't have to go into one of the camps, hopefully. We never heard exactly, but I always felt kind of proud of my grandfather that he did that and didn't, you know, submit to the chaos of the moment of, you know, thinking that this family was going to cause Seaside to be bombed or something, which it was during World War II, but, you know, not by them.
Right.
And that he gave them a chance to not have to go into the camps.
Yeah.
So I like that story about my grandfather.
Yeah. It just showed that he had some respect for them, whether he knew them personally. I assume in a town that size in this time period that they did know them and knew that they weren't nefarious, and just that he treated them right. And you know, you just feel badly though about what property did they abandon.
I know,
and they probably had to, never got back.
Exactly.
Walk away from school and friends. Tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read a few books about the times and families leaving and than coming back and what they came back to and such. So it was a very tough time.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of coming back, so why did you come back here? Why did you retire here instead of somewhere else?
You know, my whole family's here. And my great nieces, Lily and Aubrey Taylor, are athletes. And so I thought, you know what? I want to come back and watch them play in high school. So got to watch that first winter season of basketball and volleyball. And then, of course, COVID hit and, you know, didn't get to see too much last year, but saw a little bit. The first year I was here, I watched 60 athletic events for those two girls.
Oh, my goodness.
60.
And that's basically, I mean, that was just the first half.
That was just basically fall and winter.
Yeah.
Lots of volleyball, lots of basketball. The youngest was still in high school or in middle school. So she also played in the PBL, the Pacific mm-hmm. Basketball League, which has basketball all the time. And I counted it up and was like, wow. Okay. Well, that's why I came down here, is I wanted to be a part of their lives. And so I'm down here. My family's here. It's a nice place to retire to. Talking to like the thousands of people that retire to Seaside. And so it's just been kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. What would you say that sort of your family's mark in Seaside's history will be when looking back, when others are looking back at it? Or what do you hope it will
be? I think that our mark is that we were connected to our community. My grandfather is police chief, spent years with that. My dad was a volunteer firefighter. They owned a business in town. He was actually on city council, was running for county commissioner when he passed away in 1970. My mom was involved with various committees and such around town. So was my sister. Then my nephew, he and his family at Bruce's Candy Kitchen are very connected to the community. And then now he's the school board chair. So... community involvement is kind of what we do. It just seems to be part of our genes and our family that, you know, we give back to the community. And that's what I feel like I'm doing now in retirement with the museum and the library and Rotary and all of that. So
we've got about a minute left, but we didn't give you a chance to really plug those things. You just talked about some of your activities there. But if somebody wanted to get involved or if there's anything coming up that you want to promote, how people would call or email or how they get involved, the same places you are.
As most museums have found, a lot of volunteers have kind of fallen by the wayside with COVID and such. And so we are rebuilding our volunteer group. We're only open a couple days a week now, and hopefully by next summer we'll be able to be open more hours. So call or check the museum webpage, send me an email through that, and we can get you connected. And so that's a big one. And then our Rotary auction is this weekend. So you were saying you're a Rotarian and you're feeling guilty. Go and look for the Seaside Rotary auction. And then, of course, visit your public library. There's nothing better.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. We may need to bring you back, though, because I want to hear more about the police chief. So go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.